Our last speaker is Sally Kincaid from Leeds Socialist Workers Party branch. And Sally writes regularly about China in Socialist Review.
I'm going to spend 1 second on Trump. Trump describing the Chinese virus was a disgraceful racist act. Trump talking about drinking whatever it's called, Dettol or whatever it is. Actually, if he does it first, then I'm quite prepared to watch. That's it as far as Trump's concerned. When we look at China, I don't know whether the comrades have managed to get hold of the ISJ yet, but there's a very, very good article by Joe's at the very beginning, who talks about the virus and viruses as they are. But China has been quite used to viruses. Ironically, in 2003, I happened to take my first trip to China with my family to see my brother. We were there 2 weeks. The first week was okay. There was a lot of rumours about SARS going around. The second week, it literally went into lockdown. Everywhere you went, your temperature was being taken. You were being monitored. The places like the Terracotta Army were almost empty. And then when we got back to London, we walked through Heathrow, nobody took our temperature, nobody took a blind bit of notice, in fact. We got home and the Sunday I start feeling poorly, and I'm a terrible one for Googling symptoms. So I started Googling symptoms. Oh my God, I've got SARS. So I called my doctor and I said, look, I think I've just come back from China, I'm not feeling very well. He said, well, come and see me. He put me in a separate waiting room. He said, right, I'm going to quarantine you for a week. So I said, okay, what does that mean? He says, just stay at home and watch films. I said, okay, I can do that. Anyway, I went back in on the Friday and he said, Sally, I've got confession to make. I said, what is it? He said, you had jet lag. So I was actually quarantined for a week having jet lag. So, you know, there's a certain irony there, isn't there? But if you look at actually what's happened within Wuhan, I was watching, there's a thing I recorded earlier in the week about the lockdown in Wuhan. And, you know, we've got to look at 76 days of lockdown. Now, we know how hard being in the house, especially if you've got kids, has been over the last few weeks. But imagine 76 days and living in conditions like this, you know, tiny little flats, tiny spaces. And when we talk about, I've been battling, because I'm a trade union rep, and I've been battling for the last few weeks over trying to get the schools completely closed down, or if they're open, with people with PPE, etc. So I've been battling about, you know, we all have, haven't we? At 8 o'clock tonight, we're going to be shouting PPE and test, and all that. When you look at what's going on, what happened in Wuhan, and basically the gear that they are using is absolutely phenomenal. It's just, it's basically masks. They test everybody in the morning to make sure that they know how dangerous the virus is by using flour. And if you try and take your clothes off without touching the flour, I mean, very, very serious. Serious protection, unlike what we've got in our health service, of course. And then at the moment, a colleague of mine is actually making shrubs and has got a cottage industry, because Pinderfields Hospital, which is a PFI hospital, by the way, hasn't got enough shrubs to keep everybody going. So, you know, this idea that suddenly if we just wear masks or just wear this and just wear that, we'll be safe is absolutely nonsense. Again, to go back to Wuhan, you see, It was kept secret. I'm not saying China's a marvelous state. It is not under any means. You know, if you look at the history of the disease, beginning of November, there was a first case. And there was a guy called Dr. Li Wang Lang, who actually said, look, there is a problem here. On the 30th of December, he sent a message to a group of fellow doctors warning them about the possible outbreak of an illness that resembles severe acute respiratory syndrome, i.e. SARS, in Wuhan, where he worked. Now, he died. He died at the age of 33 on the 7th of February. But before he died, the Chinese state tried to trash him, tried to censor him, tried to shut him up. So, you know, it's not been such a marvel. They may have the equipment now, but to be honest, the state capitalism as it is wasn't perfect by any means. The forced quarantine, the community policing that's gone on. I was looking at the province, which is down here, where they brought in, for 30 million people, this is, were given temporary passports in four cities in that province. One person each household was allowed to go out every 2 days for food. So you've got the whole crisis, and in some senses, I sent a WeChat to somebody I met at Marxism from China, because she was asking me how we were going over here. And I asked her a question about what's happening now when people are going back to work, because that's the key, isn't it? You know, they've flattened the number of cases. The cases are usually related to people coming into the country as opposed to within the country. Or that's what they're saying. Now, let me always do a proviso on this. You know, stats, statistics and statistics can be all messed up, and then people don't have to tell the truth, do they? Because nobody else can prove it. But I was wondering, and then I thought, actually, let's look at Foxtrot, because when the shutdown happened, the people were aware it was the beginning of the big holiday in China. It's when basically half the world gets on a train and goes to meet their family. And the shutdown happened during that time. So when Foxconn workers started returning after the winter, after the break, but there was the whole thing about having one room per person. Now, Foxconn factory is the ones that make these things. They are, you know, they are a massive employer. Those of you who heard my meet know that in Shenzhen City, there's a factory which has got between 340,000 and 440,000 workers in one factory complex. They live in dormitories, so 6 to 8 to a dormitory. It's pretty appalling conditions, to be honest, although they have improved over the last few years because of strikes, etc. So I thought, well, let's have a look at Foxtrot. Foxtrot had a problem. People were coming back from the countryside. They were being told they could only put one person in one room. Once they got the mathematicians amongst you can work it out. Once you get to a certain number of rooms, and then the second person comes back, you're a bit stuck, aren't you? So the Foxtrot had to say to people, please do not come back to work. Please don't come back to work. Now, I thought, well, what's happened to Foxtrot since they've come back to work? And they're basically, they've got protection. They've basically having their temperatures taken everywhere they go. They're in groups of 20. They disinfect their hands, shoes at the factory gate. You bring in your own towel. I like this one. No sunny side up eggs. I don't know why no sunny side up eggs, but that's one of the rules. So they've come back into production, but come back into production when they've made the factory, so in some senses, safer. And then I thought, okay, let's have a look, because I know some people who know me will know that the China Labour Bulletin is my favourite bit of a way of finding out about strikes in China. So I thought, okay, I'll have a look and find out what's happened about the strike rate. Has there been any more strikes? And actually, comrades, there's about 10 pages of these, are the number of strikes that have happened in the last month. But usually over things like non-payment of wages, wage arrears. There's a group of footballers that got cross. Let me find out the footballers. Driving school, workers protesting wage arrears of driving school, workers protesting wage arrears of a restaurant, it goes on and on. So that's in the last month. Now, it's not the same as it was before C-19, because obviously before C-19, there was lots and lots of unofficial strikes going, because remember, it's not legal to strike in China. It's not illegal, it's not legal. So that was the one that's something, well, that's interesting. If I keep looking at that map, and then we can work out whether or not actually workers are coming back more confident, or whether the bosses are going to be on the offensive. Just in terms of the figures, you know, there's been less deaths in China. Well, they say there's been less deaths in China than there has in the UK. Just a fact for you. Just one of the other things, because again, we're battling with teachers. Sorry, not teachers, head teachers at the moment. That's actually the protection that is being insisted in the hospitals that was being filmed anyway. I don't know about other hospitals, and the kids coming back. In order to make sure they keep to the 2 meter rule, they've got little hats with little things on them. They can't go any closer than that. So that's the children with these hats on. It comes back from one of the earlier dynasties where one of the ways of stopping people gossiping about the emperor was to make sure they had these big hats so they couldn't whisper behind his back. So that's a very, very quick history about what's happening. Again, just another, I forgot, just remembered another story. In 2014, again, we were in China, and that summer, McDonald's and KFC hadn't got any meat. No meat at all. You go into McDonald's, you say, can I have a beef burger? And they go, no, we have no meat. The only thing we've got is ice cream and coffee. And the reason that it happened was because one of the discovery, one of the Chinese meat, Shanghai meat companies, had been selling expired stock to fast food restaurants. So rather than, you know, closing the restaurant down, they kept them open, but they removed all the meat from there. So they kind of, they do try and sort stuff out, but they do it in a top down, a very, very top down, way. This is not about socialism. On people's phones at the moment, because my brother's girlfriend's still over there, you have to have an app, and the app basically takes your temperature. And if your temperature goes up, then you're told to go home and stay indoors, etc. Some of the other horror stories that have gone on, again from Wuhan, where people were suspected to have coronavirus, but they weren't quite sure. They were put into forced quarantines a long way away from their families. So, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, but I am saying that in terms of the way that Britain is doing this and the way that Donald Trump keeps talking about opening schools, etc., is in some senses, I think, blood on their hands. Blood on their hands. In my district, I've got a special school, which is a private for-profit school, by the way, which is insisting on opening to look after vulnerable children. And I think what they're doing is putting those vulnerable children and their staff in a lot of danger. Today, I had a report of a driver who was driving a minibus to one of the special schools who's now got C19, and yet those children, those kids with the most severe problems or disabilities were in that minibus with that driver, and yet our state is saying, oh no, we can carry on doing this. So I think we're in a very, very strange and different world. I think it's a world that, as long as we keep organising ourselves and keep the resistance up, keep talking the politics, keep doing the practical stuff to support people in whatever way we can, then we could come out of this in a better place. If we don't do that, then actually the world is going to be a very, very miserable place. Workers' Memorial Day is normally, you know, put a wreath somewhere and be sad for a minute. Actually, this year became more of a collective resistance, you know. Whatever his name is, Boris can do whatever. In terms of how we organise, it's got to be from below. It's got to be wherever we are, whether we're in a union and self-isolating, or whether we're in a community group and trying to. I'll give you an example. This week, my partner's got an allotment. There's a lot of rhubarb up here, a lot of rhubarb. So a call went out to say, look, can we have some spare rhubarb for the local food bank? That was Saturday. By Monday morning, we had enough rhubarb to give three food banks. Plus, it meant we had conversations about capitalism, about C19, about phonics of all things in one of the places, and that's it, isn't it? How we network, how we make sure our side is stronger out of this and their side is a lot weaker. And keep your eye on the Chinese Labour Bulletin, because that, as those bubbles begin to grow, it means that workers are resisting in a terribly hard situation.